Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. In the Texas town of Premont, they don't have the glory of the Friday night lights anymore. Premont, which is just south of Alice and north of Falfurrias in Jim Wells County, killed its high school football program in order to save money and pay for a new science lab. The question is Fremont better or worse off for not having high school football any longer? In this half hour, we're talking about the case against high school football, an article written by Amanda Ripley in the New Atlantic magazine. She also wrote the new book, The Smartest Kids in the World and How They Got That Way. Amanda Ripley, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
So, the case against high school football. So what case is that? Why do we need a case, build a case against high school football?
You know, it's not something I noticed until I spent some time following students in other countries. These countries that you hear about, Finland, South Korea, with some of the top performing education systems in the world. And I started to realize that we were sort of unique, the way that sports were a core mission of our high school. That is not the case in most countries in the world. And kids in Finland do play sports, but they play it separately from school on their own in pickup games or in community rec centers. And this has a lot of implications, one of which is obviously the cost of sports. But another implication is that, you know, school is really about learning in these countries. Principals don't have to hire teachers who are also coaches, and they don't have to find substitutes every time the teacher coaches go to play away games. And there's a really clear signal about what school is for. So it seemed like a conversation worth having. Is the primacy of sports in American high schools, and football in particular, worth it or not?
Our phone number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. So we do have a laboratory case, sort of, with Premont here in South Texas, where they had to kill all of their sports and in order to save money because the school district was so bad that the Texas Education Agency was trying to shut it down. So they're trying to turn things around, and in order to make the numbers work, had to kill football.
That's right. Football at Premont cost about $1,300 a player, and math, by contrast, cost about $618 per student. This is fairly typical. In some schools, it's actually a much bigger difference. The cost of football or cheerleading can be three or four times the cost of math or reading per student. So part of the reason for that decision, which was obviously pretty devastating to the athletes at that school, was to save $150,000 a year. So that was pretty straightforward. But another reason, which I thought was actually more interesting, was that the superintendent really wanted to send a signal to everybody that academics mattered more than anything else. And until they got that right, until they were giving kids the kind of education they deserved, then, you know, spending this huge amount of time and energy and focus on football didn't make sense.
So some people say that having sports is necessary sometimes to keep kids actually involved in school, that if they don't have a reason to go because they play a certain sport, then they drop out.
Right. That is the most common argument that I've heard, particularly among American principals, that, you know, this is actually keeping some portion of kids in school. And I think I can understand that, and I think it made sense for a long time. I'm not sure that that makes sense anymore. If the only reason that a student is going to school or studying is so that he can get good enough grades to play football, that eventually is going to come around and bite him. Maybe not now, but maybe in college or in his job. Because at this point, kids really need to learn higher order thinking skills in a way that they didn't before in order to survive, you know, in this economy. So it seems like this no longer works to lure kids into school by giving them sports. It doesn't seem like really a fair trade over the arc of that student's life.
But there is the argument that having a competition does teach a resilience and teaches kids to deal with sometimes you lose, sometimes you win, all the hard things about life.
For sure. And, you know, I played soccer all my life. I really enjoyed it. I will say, though, that now that I'm an adult, working in an economy that changes quickly, and as a journalist, you know, it's not a stable economy, I have come to realize that there is no better place to learn about resilience and hard work and failure and recovery than in a really rigorous classroom. And the idea that we have to learn those things in sports and not in our classrooms is kind of fascinating when you think about it. That is, you know, you want to show me a kid in Korea, I will show you a resilient kid who is incredibly hardworking and knows how to fail and get back up again and recover. That is not necessarily the only way to get to that place, but I will promise you that kid did not get there through sports.
Let's go to the phones. Our number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Deborah is on the line. Deborah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm just wondering, when did everything get out of whack? Because when I was in school 25 years ago, there was four or five coaches for the high school. Now, in my child's school district, there is 15, 20 coaches. And, you know, I noticed, you know, coaches make a higher income than your average, you know, your regular science teacher or your math teacher. And when did things start getting kind of out of balance and so much emphasis being put on sports?
All right. Deborah, thanks for that phone call. And Amanda Ripley, author of the book, The Smartest Kids in the World and How They Got That Way. What do you think? What's your answer?
I agree. It's been ratcheting up. And it's particularly interesting is at the same time that many schools have invested more and more in sports, more and more students are playing very elite levels of sports outside of school, right, in sort of club or travel teams. So you have this, you know, two-tiered system, both of which seem to be very serious and very heavily invested in sports, which is not where most children will end up, you know, paying for college or as a profession. Oh, about 2% of American college students actually get athletic scholarships. But anyway, to answer your question more specifically, this started 100 years ago in the United States when more and more kids started going to school and schools started trying to control sports as a means to control students. And this was not a bad idea at the time. It was, at the time, a good way to make sure kids were not, you know, getting into huge fights on the football field if you had some control over it in the school. And it was, when they were training kids to enter an industrial economy, not a bad way, you know, as we were talking about, to tempt kids into coming to school. So it made some sense at the time. It has, you know, really escalated, as your caller noted, particularly as the growth of college sports has really exploded. And that obviously trickles down to the high school level. But, you know, just to get a sense of how this differs from the rest of the world, I surveyed hundreds of exchange students who had lived in the U.S. For some period of time and gone to public school here. And 9 out of 10 of them said that kids here cared more about sports than their peers back home. And actually, a majority of Americans who studied abroad agreed. So there is this kind of priority on sports that you don't see in other countries.
But the issue is, and real quickly, because we're going to go to a break, is that we'll answer this when we come back. But are we... Is it because there's a limited amount of time and a little limited amount of attention you can get from a child, and so you're taking away their ability to become more intellectually accomplished if you have them also on the football field? But we're going to continue our conversation about the case against high school sports. When we come back, this is The Source on KSTX. The number to join the conversation, 614-8980. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the case against high school sports. It's an article written by Amanda Ripley of The Atlantic. She also wrote the new book, The Smartest Kids in the World and How They Got That Way. It's a penetrating look at the American school system, a comparative study against other school systems in the world and why they're getting better results for less money than we are here in the United States. And the topic of Premont High School in Premont, Texas, came up because they killed their football program in order to make way for a science lab. And so the thing is about Premont, Amanda, is that the whole town would come together. The little towns in Texas, they need high school football. They need those Friday night lights. And to take those away, it seemed like the people were like they were like actually in tears when they found that they would no longer have high school football.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I don't think that I would never argue for banning high school sports. I mean, I think that's extreme. But I would quote for you, in 1927 in Texas, the athletic director at the time of the University Interscholastic League, a guy named Roy Henderson, he wrote, "Football cannot be defended in the high school unless it is subordinated, controlled, and made to contribute something definite in the cause of education." So for a long time, we've been struggling to get this balance right. And I guess what I'm trying to say is the balance is out of whack. And you're right that it is important that communities have this kind of, you know, bind. And one of the ways that communities do come together is over sports. But it seems like when you have more and more teams traveling out of state for tournaments, when you have more and more kids being left back at school with substitute teachers who maybe are not giving them a great education so that these coach teachers can go off and coach, and when you have fewer and fewer dollars to spend on the skills that really matter to kids over the arc of their lives, it's worth considering whether we're getting that balance right.
Let's go to the phones. Our number is 614-8980. Dennis is on the line. Dennis, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Tangentially related to sports is exercise. I just wanted to point out that the latest brain research shows that exercise will help a person build brain cells throughout his or her entire life. So if we tone down sports, we also need to emphasize the fact that the students need to be getting exercise, not just because it's fun, but because it's good for their brain development. That's what I wanted to say.
All right. Thank you, Dennis. So in this era of obesity rates out of control, maybe sports in high school is a way to try and help people manage their health and grow their brains.
I wish that were the case, because I agree that exercise is incredibly important to kids and to grown-ups and to learning. Only 40% of American high school seniors actually participate in high school athletics at all during the year. So a majority of kids are not actually participating in this activity that we're spending a significant amount of money on. And in fact, you know, they don't necessarily have to be mutually exclusive. A great example of this is Spelman College in Atlanta. The president of Spelman suddenly realized that they were spending $1 million on athletics for the 4% of the student body that was playing sports, when about half of their incoming freshman class had conditions, obesity or high blood pressure or diabetes or some kind of health condition that could be improved with exercise. So what she decided to do was to flip it, to actually shift that $1 million away from competitive athletics towards everybody else. So they started having more exercise classes, they renovated the gym, they had, you know, races on campus, and really tried to broaden out the appeal so that these students were developing, you know, lifelong habits of exercise and health that would serve them better than having, you know, competitive elite athletics.
Okay, Cora now joins our conversation. Cora, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I would just like to emphasize also, reemphasize this fallacy that it's good exercise. Well, not the whole school is getting exercise, just a select few. The other thing that I don't understand is why we've gotten to a point where now we have Thursday night football. I mean, don't these kids have Friday day's classes? You know, first, next we're going to have Wednesday night football. The emphasis on football especially is just gone out of whack. And I would like to know what we as parents and community can do about it. There's no sense to have Thursday night football for kids.
Cora, that's a great point.
Middle school kids.
Oh, middle school kids for Thursday night football.
They too are beginning. I mean, they're having football games. Of course, they're having mostly in the afternoons. But last night, I mean, yeah, was it last week? What do we see? Thursday night football for the local high schools, and it's televised. I know there's money in that, but good heavens, there's also money in our having educated public and students that don't go overseas, or that don't get their job taken from somebody that's coming here smarter or better educated than we are.
Okay, Cora, I'm going to get Amanda to answer that and respond to your question. So, Amanda, are you hear about Thursday night football when kids should be getting ready for the Friday afternoon test? You know, they're out there cheering or going to the game or playing in the game.
Yeah, no, there is something particularly about football that seems to seems to expand past what seems reasonable, and no one questions it because everyone's having a lot of fun watching it. But it does seem to have this creeping effect where it gets bigger and bigger, not everywhere, but in many places, and really distracts the whole school, not just the students who are playing, obviously, who do, I think, get a lot out of the experience. But the majority of students and teachers and the principal also end up spending a lot of mental energy on this. I mean, when I talked to principals, they said some of them, most of the meetings they have with parents are actually about sports. And they spend a huge amount of time dealing with sports budgets and the various fundraisers and trying to figure out insurance. And they have to hire, you know, people to line the fields, and they have to have buses. I mean, there's a huge amount of logistics that I never even thought about that take focus away from things that really matter and that should be central to schools. One of the things that the students at Premont told me, you know, let me be clear, the students at Premont, after football was canceled and other sports were suspended temporarily, they were not pleased. You know, they felt robbed, and I can understand why they felt that way. At the same time, you know, the school quarterback said that he did admit he had a lot more time. He, quote, he said, it did make you focus. There was just all this extra time you never got behind on your work. And that first semester, 80% of the students at Premont passed their classes compared with 50% the previous fall. So, you know, there were lots of things that changed at Premont. It wasn't just the absence of sports. But the superintendent and the principal did tell me that they felt that focus benefited everyone because he didn't have all this kind of lead up and build up and depression if you lose and all the things that surround the game in addition to the actual game night.
Yeah, they also saw their attendance rates climb up pretty well and help them keep the school district from being absorbed into a neighboring school district. So that was good for them.
That's right. Yeah, luckily the state decided to keep Premont open, and they did bring back most of their sports, except they have not yet brought back football. And they still have a ways to go, you know, to improve their academics, and I think everyone there knows that. But it did seem like that focus, that shift in culture, was one of many things that really did help.
Yeah, well, I spoke to the president of the school board recently. She said that they have condemned the football stadium, and they don't have the money to rebuild it. But now, for the first time, since they've killed football, they do have $1 million in the bank, which is a big thing for that school district, which had been in the red for so long.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it is true that football in particular is very expensive per player for various reasons. And so there are schools that are starting to try to figure out this balance. In addition to Premont, there's a chain of public charter schools called Basis that's mostly in Arizona, but also in Texas. And the founders of that school system told me this, by the way, is a system that's really designed to be academically quite rigorous and aligned with international standards. But one of the things they realized was that football in particular had a tendency to kind of consume the attention of students and the rest of the school. So instead, they offer other cheaper sports, pretty much any sport any student wants to play except for football. And anyone who wants to play can play. So it's really more about exercise and fun. And, you know, other little things they did, you know, Arizona's mainstream league is very costly to join. So Basis Tucson North joined an alternative league that is cheaper and doesn't require any long distance travel, which means that kids don't have to miss class very often for games. So they've kind of tried to strike this balance, but I think it takes constant monitoring to avoid having it tip the other way.
So let me ask you about your book real quickly, The Smartest Kids in the World and How They Got That Way. That's Finland, right?
Well, I focused on three countries, Finland, South Korea, and Poland. Finland and South Korea both do achieve at the top of the world, and they weren't always that way, so it's kind of fascinating to see how they improved. And then Poland, because they've radically improved in the past 10 years, despite having a pretty high child poverty rate. So they're a good example of how to get from below average to average or above average compared to the rest of the world.
And these nations, they don't have school districts like we have. It's all very centrally controlled.
Not always true, actually. There are lots of places that have a more federated system. A great example of that's actually Canada, believe it or not. Canada is all run at the local or province level, And Canada has also improved its system, and now Canadian teenagers are doing very well on international tests of critical thinking. And actually, the average Canadian kid is outperforming the average kid in Beverly Hills in math. So, you know, and Canada also struggles with a higher level of child poverty and immigration, especially compared to a place like Finland. So
do these places have high standardized test rates?
No, typically other countries do not have as many standardized tests as the United States. Korea is very test driven and is a pretty intense pressure cooker model for education, the kind of thing you see all over Asia. Finland has very few standardized tests, although they have a very rigorous end of high school exam that lasts 50 hours over the course of several weeks.
Wow. Amanda Ripley, she's the author of the book, The Smartest Kids in the World and How They Got That Way. Thank you so much for joining us on The Source today. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flabb is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.